Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use.
Hello, this is the Victor Davis Hanson Show, and this is our Friday News Roundup. We're going to look at the news of the week, lots on Elon Musk and Trump and Taiwanese chip makers. So stay with us, and we'll be right back.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back. I would like to remind people and the new people to let you know that Victor is the Martin and Illy Anderson Senior Fellow in Military History and Classics at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne and Marsha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. And you can find him at his website, victorhanson.com. We welcome everybody. It's called The Blade of Perseus. So please come join us and get a subscription, too. Victor, so Elon Musk brought Don Lemon on to X as a show, and he seems to have hired him and then immediately fired him, and they seem to have gotten into some sort of spat, and I was wondering your take on their interaction.
Well, I mean, Don Lemon was rejoicing when Donald Trump was kicked off Twitter, and remember he gave us those sanctimonious lectures and sermons that private entities had the right to do whatever they wanted. So he never thought the boomerang would hit him, and that's what Elon Musk did. He said, you know what? I thought maybe I'd give you a chance. You were down and out. You were a CNN former person that had zero audience. So I thought you'd come on here and maybe you can interview people like me and get some ad revenue and have your show. And Don Lemon reportedly, you know, as part of his demands, he wanted, what, a $5 million bonus? He wanted a Tesla pickup. He wanted his boyfriend or fiance to go to Vegas. So part of the narrative or the backstory was that these people at CNN, because they had this name CNN, and for two generations, that was the, for example, that was the TV show at airports. And that was the signature. It was the first global network. And so out of 330 million people, maybe 400,000 or 500,000 watch it. So he has no audience, but he has this ego that thinks he has an audience. And he's black and he's gay, so he thinks he's got entitlement in today's woke calibrations. So he goes on and starts off the interview kind of snarky, And then he starts to think that he's going to go after the world's richest man who has more brains in his little finger, I mean, than Don Lemon does. If you think about X and space, the rockets, SpaceX, and everything, Tesla. And so he starts to get snarky, and then he suggests that Elon Musk is trying to censor things. And all Elon Musk kept saying is, if it's against the law. And he said, well, China, you would have child porn. Is it against the law? It won't be on there. If it's not, it will be on there. That's what he said. And that was a radical difference. Another subtext is everybody was rejoicing that Elon Musk bought this at 20% of what it's worth. And they thought it was going to crash or they would leave in droves. But they realized that it has this brand name Twitter and it's now X and it's there. And because of the nature of the beast, it's much easier to communicate than, say, Facebook or blogs. So it's working. And it's now not in the hands of the left. And they feel like they thought, wow, if we ever wanted to censor any stories about Hunter's laptop, we couldn't do it because this guy doesn't cooperate. If we want to go hire FBI contractors at Twitter, like we used to when James Baker, the ex-FBI agent, general counsel, was working with us. He won't do it. He won't do it. So we lost the venue. And so they're really angry about that. But it just shows you the sense of entitlement by Don Lemon. Because if you just look at what he is in the sense of his position or stature as a journalism, he has certain things that will tell you why you get $20 million. Is he unusually brilliant? No. Does he make insightful comments? Not unless he's talking about a jet plane disappearing into a black hole off Indonesia. So, I mean, that's the level of his originality. Is he particularly likable? No. He's obnoxious. Is he entitled? Yes. So he was in an asymmetrical position, but he thought he was Don Lemon, so he's used to bullying people and it didn't work, and now he's gone.
No, I thought it was interesting what he said about, he kept pressing him about the use of drugs, et cetera. And finally, Musk tells him, well, as far as my investors go, what they should feel is whatever they're giving him, give him some more of it. That old Lincoln statement about General Grant. Lincoln, he's a drunk. Get him off the battlefield.
Well, what he said he was using was ketamine. Ketamine is an anesthesia, and it's been found to be very effective, more effective in some cases than antidepressants for periodic blues or bouts of depression. And you don't take it daily. You take it once in a while. It's an off-label use of a prescription drug, and he said he used it once in a while. But people like Elon Musk, who have brilliant ideas, and I hate to say it, but a lot of people have touches of bipolar disorder because they're brilliant and they get flashes of insights that the rest of us don't do, followed by sort of, I don't know, erratic or depressive, and that's the price you pay. But he's not bipolar. He just has a little, he feels once in a while he does it. He says he doesn't smoke marijuana. He doesn't particularly drink. So I don't know. I don't know what the whole point of the interview was. It was to say to the millions of people on X, I just got a big fat contract from this stupid Elon Musk who's got all this money, and I'm going to shake him down for $5 million, a new truck, a vacation, and then I'm going to embarrass him in front of everybody. He's going to be so happy because he's got me, Don Lemon, or Lemon, or whatever the hell his name is. And yeah. It's just pathetic.
It's absolutely pathetic. And I was just wondering, though, because they did get into the whole great replacement theory, which I think means that they're bringing in people that are not white so they can replace the white population. Is that true?
He just destroyed him on that topic because Don Lemon said, why are you upset about this? And he says, well, there's reasons they're bringing them in. And he says, well, what? They can't vote. And, you know, they can vote when you have 70% of the electorate not showing up on election day and the rejection rate of ballots decreases by a magnitude from 5% on usual earlier mail-in ballots goes down to 0.3 or 0.4 and you're flooded with it. But more importantly, he tried to explain, this guy's an idiot. He's tried to say the census, unfortunately, counts residents, not citizens. And the census determines how many congressional districts a state gets. And because of past Supreme Court rulings, you divide up the population by 435 congressional districts, and you get about 700 to 800,000 people, right?
Yes.
And every 700 to 800,000 people, you get a congressional seat. Well, if you're swarming 10 million people in, you're talking about 15 to 20 congressional seats, right? And they tend to go to New York and Illinois and California that are losing population because people can't stand to live there. They're migrating. And the left says, well, if we're going to lose American citizens and therefore congressional districts and therefore the House, we want our own guys. So we're going to replace the out-migration with the in-migration. Nothing. And he didn't understand that. So then, you know, we've talked about this before. The great replacement theory is supposed to be, oh, there's all these old white people and they're deathly afraid of all these robust people of color from all over the world that are dynamic and taking away their country. No, it's not that way at all, because the right doesn't write books called The New Democratic Majority. The right doesn't write books called Demography is Destiny. Go on Amazon and type that in and see what you get. So they were glorifying this, that they thought they could change the destiny of the Democratic Party, or they could change the demography for political reasons. And then when a right person says, yeah, that's what you're doing, they say, oh, you believe in the great replacement theory. So many elements of that. You know, we had a lot of La Raza scholars, not scholars, but activists, tell us all during the 90s. And I remember when I wrote Mexifornia, and I quoted them in there. They said, you know, the future is not with old white people. There was a very famous one, I won't mention his name, who said, why doesn't old white people just go find a place and die? I think you remember that, Sammy. And the myth was that there was all these robots. Well, people are people. And if you look at the UN statistics on obesity, the per capita highest obesity rate is in Mexico. And I live in a town that has an epidemic of diabetes. One out of every three people admitted to a hospital in California, for whatever reason, is found to have diabetes or pre-diabetes. And obesity is a problem that the Hispanic community fights with. So nobody is saying, you know, there's an epidemic of unhealthy young people that tend to be Hispanic disproportionately. Instead, it's the great replacement, all these young, very healthy young Mexicans, much lower age, they're younger, and they're going to take care of these decrepit white people. Well, when I go to Palo Alto, you know what I see is decrepit white people who are neurotic in gym shorts, and they're in their 60s and 70s on the Stanford campus. You know what they're doing? They're running. They're taking their Apple Watch and examining their blood pressure, their blood rate, their heart. They're neurotic, and they're in perfect health. When I go here, I see people who are young and obese. I went to a doctor not long ago, and a young Hispanic woman told me that my blood pressure was too low. And I said, well, what is it? She said, it's way down to 120 over 80. I said, well, what is yours? She goes, it's corrected. I said, what does corrected mean? She said, 170 over 90. And whoa. I said, corrected? And so, and then when I go, I mean, I'm not trying to stereotype at all. All my friends are Latino, but when I go to the local supermarket and I get in line, it's six pack after six pack after six pack of Mountain Dew, Coke, Pepsi. I'm not talking about diet, real, you know, corn syrup,
sugar.
And so everybody knows that this is a problem, and yet Great Replacement says, oh, I don't think anybody I haven't met any white people who said, oh my God, I've got to close the border because there's not enough white people. I do think, that said, that if there was a bunch of people going down there from the Czech Republic or Poland, South Africa, whites, whatever, fleeing to get in here, and even if they had English fluency and capital and skills, there would be a big outlet. They'd say, close that border.
Yeah.
They would. And I would say it too if they're illegal. If they say, if a guy comes in from South Africa or Poland or Britain and he happens to be blue-eyed and blonde-haired and he crossed the border illegal, I'd say to myself, the first thing that guy did was cross the border illegally. The second thing he did was reside illegally in the United States. And I know what the third thing will be doing. He will find fraudulent identification. And I don't want somebody in this country that the first three things they did as an American resident was to break law, 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 because the next step gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And what are those next steps? 50% of accidents in LA County are hit and run where the driver leaves the scene of an accident because maybe he doesn't have insurance or he doesn't want to stick around or he has a felony record or he's on document. I don't know what it is. But when you break three laws coming in, you're going to be less sensitive to the law.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's turn to somebody else that's been hounded lately, and that would be Netanyahu. And apparently this week, the Bush administration has its national security advisor, Jake Sullivan, being critical of Netanyahu's work to rid the region of Hamas by attacking Rafah. And they've got some representatives. Netanyahu has his representatives coming next week to visit Biden. And I was wondering your thoughts on that.
That joke going around that Biden wants, all he's concerned about is a two-state solution, winning Nevada and Michigan. But we talked with Jack and you about how long it would take Biden to sell out Israel after October 7th. And I think I said at 1.6 to 8 weeks, because we knew that when Israel cornered Hamas, then the whole propaganda machine would go into action. That this is disproportionate. Now Biden is quoting Hamas death figures of 30-something thousand. That's been completely rebuked. And he's worried about the election. He thinks it's going to be a very close election, and he is not sure that his lawfare is going to work, that the Fannie Willis, Nathan Wade circus is going to work, even though they've been consulting, apparently, with the White House. He's not sure that Jack Smith's going to work after the asymmetrical treatment that Her dished out gave him an exemption. He's not sure that the Letitia James won't be reversed, so he's really worried about the election, and he wants to ensure the Arab American vote. As I said, I'm not sure that by pandering to that vote and pressuring Israel to lose the war, because if they let Hamas lose, they're going to lose the war. All these people are saying, this is terrible. They're all victims. The moment they pull back, you'll see a Hamas people come out of that rubble perfectly unscathed out of the tunnels. And they'll say, we beat the Jews. We killed them. We did more on any day since the Holocaust. And here we are. And they went back. And then what do you do with them? They're going to just kill anybody that tries to take. You think the United States is going to put people on the ground? You think Israel's going to have to go back in and then start it all over again? So it would be a terrible thing, and they're pressuring them.
Yeah, Netanyahu must be in a big bind because
he gave a wonderful 13-minute speech. He really did. He just laid it out. He just said he refuted everything that Biden said. He said that we said from the beginning our goals were to get the hostages back and to destroy Hamas or to get them out. We offered to do that peacefully. We said all you have to do is surrender to the Hamas leadership and give us back the hostages, and we're willing to negotiate. That was after they killed 1,200 Jews, and they didn't do it. So then he said his mission is to destroy Hamas. And the thing is, what James Carville, who's been mouthing off as usual, and all these people on the Democratic side say, it's Netanyahu. It's not Netanyahu. He's got about 85% of the Israeli people who want Hamas destroyed. Now, they may get rid of him after the election like they did Golda Meir, who got surprised in Yom Kippur. But if anything, there are people to the right. If you read Israeli media, there are people on the left criticizing him that he should have been more vigilant and preempted or done something. That's easy to say afterwards. But his criticism is not that he's too mean and he's going after Hamas and the world doesn't like it. No, it's not. And then it gets really spooky because There's now rumors that we are slowing down tank weapons, 120-millimeter tank shells and 155-millimeter artillery. That's the bread and butter of their offensive. And that we're maybe slowing down on smart bombs. And we know the thing that would really force Israel to heal would be to slow down on replacement Patriot batteries and missiles because of Hezbollah's 100,000 missile thing. So we are the ugly Americans. It's so funny about the left. They always lecture us about the ugly American. You guys interfered in the Chile, you know, Anaconda copter. You guys, Transamerica, IT&T, all you corporations. You overthrow governments everywhere from Dominican Republic to El Salvador to Nicaragua to Chile. And here, what are they doing? They're just openly, Schumer's openly talking about interfering in the politics of Israel and telling them to get rid of Netanyahu. And then they have their little satellite people like James Carville saying, you got to deal with Netanyahu. That's the only thing you got to do. You got to get rid of him. And it's just, it's pathetic. Yeah. I mean, I don't like to use that word too much, but and then there's Chuck Schumer, the mouthpiece of all this. Chuck Schumer is the guy who got in front of the Supreme Court and threatened Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, you sowed the wind. You're going to reap the whirlwind. You're not going to know what's going to hit you. And nobody said a word when he did that. There's a little bit of coughing in the Senate about it. So he's the guy that they always wheel out to say something really stupid and mean. Usually he's the guy that does it in the Senate. And Jeremy Raskin or Adam Schiff does it in the House. Says something that, well, your favorite, I can't mention, Hank Johnson.
Hey, he's got an imagination, that's for sure.
But no one would say Guam's going to flip over, but he does say stupid stuff, too.
Well, Victor, we have a sponsor for this episode, and it is Solaire Infrared Gas grills, barbecue, yum. And for me, that's especially yum, yum, because I love to barbecue. I do it all year around. So this sounds good to me. Just hearing the word makes your mouth water. You may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg or pellet barbecue, but in the middle of your busy week, who has that kind of time? You need a hot, fast infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. That heat locks in juices and flavors and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food. Juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled vegetables. And that's true, because anytime I grill, which I do quite often, it always tastes better than any restaurant. Solaire is a multi-generational, veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial-grade stainless steel. So they're built to last. Get your free guide, How to Choose the Right Infrared Grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solaire Infrared Gas Grills. For fast, delicious grilled food every day, that's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. So thank you, Solaire, for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Well, let's take a few minutes for some messages, and then we'll come right back. Stay with us.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. So Trump's been in the news lately, Victor, and apparently at an Ohio rally while he was talking to people who are very interested in cars about the car situation, he said that if he doesn't get elected, it'll be a bloodbath. And are, because of the automobile industry going into Mexico, the Chinese makers, and then, of course, they took that bloodbath out of context in left-wing news media and said he's predicting just a bloodbath.
If they don't take the EV mandates off the car industry, they're going to go broke. And China's sitting there with this idea that they're going to flood the United States with cheap EVs if it's mandated. So he said it would be a bloodbath. He said, he explained just what I said, and then he said it's going to be a bloodbath, and then he went back to the car situation, and they took that out of context and thought that was a venomous, toxic word that he was implying that he was going to commit a bloodbath. There's two things to remember. They use the term all the time, and you know, Fox News has had a heyday just showing all the clips of Rachel Maddow and all these left-wing people saying the election's going to be a bloodbath and this is going to be a bloodbath. So they know it's a metaphorical term. And then second, in addition to that, it kind of marks a Rubicon moment, because people like me have said, if Donald Trump just stops saying bird brain or insulting people, then he can win that mythical 3-5% soccer mom, Perot voter, renegade Democrat, independent, you name it, right? But I don't think I'm right anymore. I think no matter what he says, they're going to say it. He said nothing wrong, and they have this entire hysteria. So they're going to do that. This is last night, Laura, when I was on the Ingram, she said, do you think this is a landmark turning? And I said something to the degree it was, because it's going to mark what's ahead. This is going to be the nastiest, meanest campaign. And the subtext of this is, we have tried to destroy Donald Trump. We started with Russian collusion, the steal, the PP tape. We went on to the Alpha Bing. We went at Alpha Ping hoax. We did the drink the bleach stuff, the suckers who fought at Normandy stuff. We did the disinformation laptop stuff. We unleashed Peter Stroke, Lisa Page. Then we went into the two first term impeachments. We went trying the private citizen. Then we tried to get him off the ballot. Then we said January 6th was a civil war and he was an insurrectionist. And we had the four indictments. Then we had E. Jean Carroll subsidized by Reid Hoffman, the Silicon billionaire. And we didn't get anywhere.
Yeah, they're nowhere.
They're nowhere. I mean, they did defeat Donald Trump. But he's back. As I said earlier, his renewal is more amazing than the recovery of Richard Nixon. So here he's back, and he's ahead in the polls, and they're saying to themselves, oh my God, what do we do now? And we don't know what they're going to do, but this is kind of a foretaste. They're going to take every word, they're going to saturate. Will it work? There's known and unknowns. There's two knowns. We know something for about the next 7 months. One known is, the more that you are blatantly unfair and asymmetrical, the more you help Donald Trump. This fine of $355 million, it says, remember the Eighth Amendment says, excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines. Anybody knows that this is an excessive fine, and it's an unusual punishment. So it's contrary to the Constitution, and that's going to give him a lot of sympathy. And they say, well, nobody cares. All the right-wing billionaires don't want to give him money. Well, to get a bond for $350 million, probably up to $400 million soon with interest, given the real estate market, you're going to have to come up with $600 million in assets. Nobody just lends you exactly what it's... Nobody puts up a house or a golf course and says it's worth this, because you never know what it's worth if it's not cash. So how is he going to come up with $1 billion? He can't, especially if he's barred from doing business in New York. So we know that that's going to give him sympathy. We know that they're going to continue to do it because, as I said, they've tried all this stuff and they don't have 51% constituency, the border. crime, homeless, energy, Afghanistan, foreign policy. Doesn't work. DEI, it doesn't work. Nobody's for that. So they're going to try to create these melodramatic, psychodramatic history. What we don't know are two things. We don't know what the effect will be after 7 months of this, when he's flat broke and he might be in jail. We don't know we know that the effect on the MAGA base will be F you. We don't give a damn. We'll vote for him if he's in San Quentin. But we do know that there are people who do not like the Biden governance. They admit as Democrats that Trump was better or as independents, but they don't like Trump, but they just want a reason to vote for him. And we don't know, we keep using that metaphor in this show, that they're going to be Elliot on True Romance and put their hands over their ears and get in the fetal position and say, make it all go away. Just make it all go away. I can't take this anymore. In other words, they will blame Trump for being the target, right? They'll say, like Michael Pence or somebody, well, why does he always get in these situations? The other candidates don't. So if he just disappears, everything will be nice again. So we don't know how many of those will do it. And so that's an unknown. I don't have the answer to that. And I don't have the answer to the degree. How well is he going to stand up? I couldn't last one day. If they were trying to destroy me financially, psychologically, economically, materially, I mean, spiritually, it's just 24/7. The guy is 77, going to be 77 years old. I don't know how he can endure it. It's going to go on and on and on. So that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah. Well, since you were talking about it, I think I heard, and you can correct me, did Pence say he wouldn't endorse Trump this
yes.
week? Was that was this week, wasn't it? Or last week, maybe?
Yeah, he really squared the circle. He said, we had a really great run of conservative governance, but I don't recognize, I'm not sure. No, Mr. Pence, your first term will be followed by almost exactly the same type of MAGA agenda in the second. So let's just be honest. You feel, and you have a right to feel that way, that Donald Trump's antics as the disruptor outweigh his agenda. And then you're going to say you can't vote for Joe Biden, but you will be voting for Joe Biden, because if you are a conservative and you believe in the Donald Trump agenda and you do not vote for it, that absence of a vote helps Joe Biden. Whether you like it, you can talk about, you know, no labels, third candidate, Jill Stein, Cornel West, RFK. But if you don't vote as a conservative to Donald Trump, you're not helping the conservative cause, whether you like him or not. It's just a fact.
And you are helping the left wing cause.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. And myself, I don't see where these people who criticize Trump's antics and excesses, and they are excessive, I don't see where they look at Joe Biden and they say, well, look at Joe Biden. Look at that State of the Union address. He yelled at the Supreme Court justice for the first time and started yelling at him. He's the person who says junkie and you ain't black and hey, fat. And he's a mean person. He always was. And he's the person that if you want to talk, they said, well, what's he going to do about Stormy? Well, what is Joe Biden going to do when he sees a young girl and he blows in her hair, or he's on the Helsinki tarmac and he starts turkey gobbling a young girl's neck, or terror? Well, how about Stormy Daniels? Well, that's bad. But what about Tara Reid? Remember the candidates on the 2016 stage? Women must be believed. They believe that. I think Kamala Harris said, I believe Tara Reid. So, and then I won't get into the Biden family pathologies, whether it's, you know, swimming naked, according to a memoir, in front of a female Secret Service agent assigned to protect Joe, and he does it seriously, taking a shower a little bit too long with his daughter, his own daughter, according to her in her diary, you know, the FBI had to go find. They always miss stuff. They lose laptops, they lose guns, they lose diaries. And there's Frankie, the guy who's my age. Let me put it this way. Sammy, you know me. If I took a full frontal picture of me naked and it ended up on a gay porn site.
You might be offending your listeners, Victor. Please don't talk about this.
And I said, hey, I don't know how it got there. I don't think anybody would believe me. You know, and then there's Hunter who takes a picture of his phallus. And then he's saying that he was libeled and disparaged and slandered because somebody, he left the laptop with all these incriminated naked pictures of him in fornication and drug use. And there's a contract that says if you don't pick up the item, then it ownership reverts to the repair shop. And he stiffed them for the money. And then all of a sudden he says, well, we're going to sue you for defamation, but we're not saying it was my laptop. We're saying in theory, if it was my laptop, you were going to defame me, but we're not saying actually that it was my laptop. That's their case. I can't figure it out.
And that's why that young man, Hunter Biden, prances around like he's a prince. He just thinks the law doesn't apply to him.
It's so weird because, you know, all of us, if you help a child or something, you have to follow to the letter. I think it's $17,000 if you have it. Everybody's always worried. If you give your kids, be sure to report it to the IRS. Or if you give them, be sure to subtract it from your probate obligations when you're dead. All that stuff.
Yeah.
And then this guy just gets all this free. It's a loan. I'm giving him free $2 million in free. It's a loan. It's a loan. And the Joe White's loan repayment. And the IRS is so asleep, you know.
Yeah.
It's so funny. I got so angry because in that State of the Union speech, he goes, and we're going to have everybody pay their fair share. I'm thinking, okay, fair share of taxes. Your son is a tax fraud. And you can't, you're not going to, and you are a tax fraud. And there was a guy working the other day. I won't mention his name. I don't want to give too much details. A close friend of mine. Wonderful guy. He happens to be Mexican-American. He works so hard. And he was out there painting, and we were talking, and he's been audited by the IRS. And he's just scared to death.
Of course.
And he said, I went to my account and I tried to do this, maybe the depreciation on the truck. I mean, they go after people like that. And they don't, and they're mean. And he's terrified. And I'm thinking, wow, all you have to do is snort coke and fornicate and take pictures of yourself and never pay the IRS. And then all these law-abiding people in the DOJ won't ever charge you until the statute of limitations is over. If it hadn't been for that brave judge that threw that sweetheart deal out, he would be scot-free.
Yep.
So this is a weird country. And I think a lot of people look at this system of laws and they start to think, you know what? They are based on ideology. They really are. It's not just if you're, it's not the color of your skin white. They hate poor white people. They hate conservative rich white people. They don't like black conservatives. They go after them. They don't like black Latinos. Or black conservatives, they don't like conservative Latino.
Yeah.
But if you're left wing or you have a particular cachet, you're a Latino activist or you're transgender, that gives you some exemption.
Yeah. Trump's, go ahead.
I just hate to say it. It's true. Because, you know, if you're Michael Flynn and you're seen as a right-wing military guy and you say you can't remember whether you talked to the Russian ambassador, they get you for lying. And you're dead. That's it. If you're Andrew McCabe and you're a white guy and somebody says, did you leak all this information about this investigation? Nope. You sure about that? Nope. Sure, sure. Nope, nope, nope. Sure, sure, sure. Nope, 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 nope. Four times to federal authorities, twice, I think, under oath. Nothing. Nothing. No perjury, nothing. James Comey, I can't remember. I don't remember. 245 times about Crossfire Hurricane. So it's really asymmetrical. And poor Peter Navarro, he's going to go four months to jail for not following the... Eric Holder said, screw you. I'm not going to obey that subpoena. And so did Hunter.
Yep. Well, Victor, let's turn, since we're doing things Trump, I think Trump is getting some sort of revenge. He is suing George Stephanopoulos for libeling him and saying that he had raped E. Jean Carroll when that's not what the case said.
Well, the jury found that he did not. Yep. He was guilty of sexual assault, which could be anything from ripping her clothes off or kissing her too hard or I don't know what. But where did George Stephanopoulos got that? The judge in question misspoke and said something to the effect it was the equivalent to rape, and he was wrong about that. I think you'll get reversed on that for saying that, because it was, the jury did not find that. And so that was a defamation itself, to say that Donald Trump raped some woman. And, you know, Representative Mace kept trying to tell George Stephanopoulos that, and he didn't listen. He should have listened. But, of course, it's Donald Trump suing for defamation, so they're going to throw it out.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. Well, Victor, we have another sponsor for this show. We'd like to welcome the Alliance Defending Freedom. Our God-given freedoms are facing unrelenting attack. It's a battle for truth. And the only way we win is if we stand together. Thankfully, Alliance Defending Freedom has been defending our rights for 30 years and winning. Right now, they're involved in two critical cases before the Supreme Court. They're suing the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls. And in the second case, they're assisting the state of Idaho to defend its law protecting the lives of women and their unborn children against the Biden administration's attempts to override the law and force doctors to perform abortions. They need your help. With your best gift, you courageously join ADF in fighting critical Supreme Court cases against government lawlessness and help defend our cherished freedoms. Go join ADF.com/Victor. That's joinadf.com/Victor to give now. With your help and pledge, we can raise $5,000 by March 31st for ADF. Visit joinadf.com/Victor. That's joinadf.com/Victor to make your best gift right now. I know with your help, we can beat that goal and help make a generational difference for freedom. And that sounds like an excellent cause. So we welcome sponsor Alliance Defending Freedom. Well, Victor, the Taiwanese have left the United States with their industry because they're unwilling to fulfill the requirements that the government expects them with DEI hiring practices. And not just the Taiwanese microchip makers, but also Samsung has pulled back, and that's a South Korean multinational. And I was wondering your thoughts on this new turn in the DEI saga.
It was very funny because this was a multi $30 billion plus subsidy, the CHIPS bill that Biden passed, and it was well thought out. I mean, 90% of the world's microchips are for some reason produced only in Taiwan. And Taiwan is threatened to be absorbed. That's an incentive of China to do just that. So to disperse the making of these chips and to give us some national security fallback, we decided to subsidize heavily, something apparently we don't do very well. And so we were going to bring a plant, I guess it was it Arizona and Texas? And the Japanese were ready to come in, and there were other people from Asia that were willing to come in and consider getting these lavish subsidies. And notice that they did not pick Minneapolis. They did not pick Dearborn. They did not pick San Francisco Bay Area to come. They wanted semi-conservative places for the workforce and the regulations. So what do? To get the money, they have to go through the DEI process. They have a euphemism for convict. They even have to hire a percentage of convicts. And so this is a metaphor of what we're doing. In other words, we're using this DEI to burden commerce and to make decisions that are not based on market realities. And the Japanese and other investors say, you know what? These people are crazy in America. I'm not going to come over here, no matter how much money, and have 500 or 600 Japanese executives be told that they don't have the right ratio of this black person, this gay person, this transgendered person, that we're not going to do it. You keep it to yourself. We don't want it. And it fits a larger pattern in two senses. It reminds me of the pride flag flying at the embassy we abandoned, the billion-dollar embassy in Kabul, and we've talked about the George Floyd murals, the gender study. We have a, and you saw it with the Netanyahu pressure, the left has become the 1950s right, anti-communist, but now it's anti-DI that they're after. So they are the most intolerant, imperialistic, colonialist people in the world. They put their crazy climate change values, their crazy DEI values, and they try to force them down the throat of everybody abroad. So if you don't believe in gay marriage and you're a traditional Islamic society, you're in trouble. But the thing about it is, they're not like, as I said earlier, British imperialists. They didn't want suti. You know, you die, your widow's got to be on the funeral pyre. And when Indians said, well, that's our custom. And the British said, well, we have a custom too. We hang people that do that. And they did. And they got rid of the thuggee, the thug, you know what I mean? So they, at least however imperialistic they were, and they were trying to inflict what they considered enlightenment values on people who didn't want them, they had physical force. We don't. So when we tell the Japanese, you're going to have DEI, they say, screw you, we're done, out. And I think people are really resenting it because we go around the world and we lecture people about how illiberal they are, but they look at us and they think, they are very liberal, but you can't walk on Market Street in their big city. I'm not trying to emulate Tucker because I believe that U.S. supermarkets in Fresno are much better than their counterparts in Russia. I don't know about one versus one in Moscow versus New York or something, but these other countries look at us and they say, well, you have terrible racial relations now. You're going backwards. You have smashing. It's not safe to be in some of your cities. You've got a million homeless people all over your main sidewalks of your main cities. And so don't lecture us. Don't lecture us about it. And the left feels that they're not imperialistic, even though they are. It's so weird. They're messianic is the best. They're like 17th century missionaries. And they don't quite think they are, but they're so self-righteous that nobody. So when we say the ugly American, we're not talking about the guy with a flat top and a square tie and an old black suit with a white shirt and wingtips that bumbles his way into, you know, Argentina or Brazil and tells people, we need that copper mine. No, no. We're talking about a guy who talks like, well, you know, that kind of person. And he is Mr. Flip-Flop, and he's Mr. Tie-Dye, and he's Mr., you know, long hair or whatever he is. He's cool. He's hip. He's a metrosexual. He's got his pants legs up to his ankle, and his sport coat goes to his elbows. And he's, you know, he thinks he's really cool, but he's an imperialist nonetheless. But he's different than the old imperialist. When the Americans were trying to stop communism, they had the world's largest, most deadly military. We don't now. And so we don't back it up with financial strength or military. We're in decline. We have $35 trillion, and the military is short 45,000 recruits, and we're short, amazingly short, of ships, of the frigate and what we would call the old destroyer class. And I just think it's ridiculous that these. It's really weird about these left-wing people. They're so arrogant, and they're so chauvinistic. They think, we're an American. We're the best people in the world, so we can go along and tell you you have to have a third restroom for your transgender sex-identifying people. And, oh, by the way, do you have a DEI recruitment there? Do you have a safe space? Do you have separate graduations? That's the stuff they're peddling, and people don't want to hear it.
Yeah,
and we're weak. There's nothing worse than somebody who tries to impose your views abroad when you're weak.
Yeah. Well, Victor, let's go ahead and take our last break because we're coming to the end here, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit about the economy. Stay with us, and we'll be back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back to the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor can be found on social media at X at VD Hanson and on Facebook at Hanson's Morning Cup. There's also a wonderful Victor Davis Hanson fan club on Facebook, and they do a lot of researching and finding things from far back that are interesting as well. So it's kind of a nice page to go on to. Well, Victor, I was looking at poor old Larry Summers got himself out into the media again, and he was just trying to explain why the people don't believe the economy is going well, despite the fact that the administration is out there with all their recent statistics trying to say that it's getting better. And he said that the obvious thing, these ordinary people are consumers, and they see all of their food, their car, their gas, their electricity, all those prices are up. And he added, though, that where the administration and other administrations fail is that this consumer price index doesn't represent the what is affecting people in their daily lives.
No, it
dropped out mortgages, and it dropped out cars.
And fuel. Interest rates, fuel, health insurance, staple foods, eggs, milk, meat. I go shop and I see what it is. It's just ridiculous. I told you, I saw two people about a month ago in the frozen, not the frozen, but the fresh meat section of the supermarket. And they spoke very little English. And they were kind of in the way. And I said, excuse me, are you going to buy that steak? They said, no, we're just looking at it. You know, like if it's a car,
that's
you know.
A show.
Yeah, I'm going to go look at a new car.
Window
I'm gonna go
shopping.
I'm going to go look at a ribeye. And that's what, and when I go, if I buy a ribeye, people go, wow. What are you doing? So I'm very careful.
Look at that price.
And I buy, once in a while, I buy some canned dog food. I try to hide it so people don't see me buying canned dog food.
Yeah. Larry Summers seems to be a target because it doesn't seem like he said anything but the obvious, but they still,
well, they still hate him,
they
about,
hate
the,
him.
About saying that maybe the problem in the STEM fields are that women are just not culturally attuned to the culture of the STEM or something else. And he tried his best. I think he gave him $50 million for gender studies.
Yeah.
And then they just rubbed his nose down and humiliated him. Yeah. He should have said, if you want to fire me, fine. I'm not going to resign. Just fire me if you want.
Wasn't this Harvard again? Controversy was Harvard. Yeah.
And he got on the wrong side of the anti-Semites when he just said, he criticized Harvard, Claudine Gay, for not being more forthright about the anti-Semitism on campus. The anti-Semitism committee had anti-Semites on it, remember, as did Stanford's.
Yeah.
So he's part of a meritocratic Jewish American older elite. And he's kind of my age, and I went to school with a lot of people like him at Stanford. And they were very liberal, and they were brought up with the idea that a person who is prejudiced against Jews is some cowboy in Montana who believes the beef market's rigged by Jews in Chicago, which was true at one time. Not that it was rigged, but there were people in Montana who felt that way. I grew up with them. I remember when I went to UC Santa Cruz in 1971, I met two Jewish guys in our dorm. I said to him, literally, you're the first Jewish guy I've ever met. My parents had friends, but I'd never, I didn't know they were Jewish. They never said they were Jewish. I didn't know what Jewish was. I knew what it was, but I never saw a real Jew. And it was So the point was, I grew up with people who had no idea who Jews were or what, but they did know that they were, they controlled the peach and the plum and the nectarine market somewhere. I don't know where it was. It was some mystical place in New York where they got $20 a box and we got three. And anyway, my point is, that's what that generation of Larry Summers grew up with. And their parents had suffered from pogroms, their grandparents, the Holocaust, and they came to the United States. There was FDR. They didn't want to know that FDR had kind of sent a lot of Jews back to the Holocaust. But they didn't really worry about that. They just knew that they were not right-wing, and therefore they were not going to be anti-Semitic, because it was the Klan and all that stuff. Okay. And now they've realized that the Republican Party is a populist party. It's not anti-Semitic. It's the most pro-Israel group of people in the world. If it wasn't for the American Republican conservative movement, Israel would have no foreign supporters. And yet the people who really do not like Jews, qua Jews, is the left-wing base of the Democrats. It's not even the base anymore. It's the Democratic Party. And there is not, I hate to say it, there is not a major black leader of my generation who was not anti-Semitic. It's Al Sharpton. Tell those people, get on their yarmulke and come over here, and I'll, you know, remember Freddie Fender, all that.
Yeah.
There was Jesse, I guess I'm on Hymietown now. There was, you know, we got Kanye West, right? There's a Jewish cabal, and even Candace Owens said there's a Jewish cabal in Hollywood. And then there's, there's Farrakhan, gutter religion and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and then there's Reverend Wright. The dim Jews won't let me see Barack. And, you know, they have special missiles the Jews make that can find Arabs. They hunt out Arabs. That was in one of his newsletters. And that's, you know, people should collate that, those statements of Reverend Wright, and then collate when the Chicago Sun-Times, I think, in 2008 interviewed Barack Obama before the Reverend Wright, you know, chickens coming home to roost. No, 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 not God bless America, God damn it. Before all that, remember they interviewed him because he was trying to pass himself off, that he wasn't a snotty little privileged prep school kid with an exotic name who had gamed the system and didn't know anything about the black experience.
Yeah.
So he went to Reverend Wright's church. And they were very skeptical of left. How can you be so sophisticated and educated and you're not an atheist like we are? You actually believe that crap? And so they asked him in this interview, well, Mr. Obama, did you go to church? Yes, I went to every service. Didn't miss a service. Not a service. He married me. He baptized, and they were thinking. And then like a month later, it was like, okay, you didn't miss a service, so you were there when Reverend Wright, we're looking at the film, where were you seated when he said, God damn America? And he said, oh, I missed that one.
Yeah, of course, conveniently so. Victor, just one last thing. Did you see that video of Joe Biden outside of, a restaurant,
yes,
or something, with that little kid right next to him and the man that was?
Two poor African-American guys were trying to do their best to keep him.
Is that, I was thinking, well, I hope the older man was his security detail or something, because he looked like he was wandering on his own.
I don't know what I would do. It's like he's drenching, it's going to be drenched. And I got this umbrella, but he doesn't know where he's going. I can't tell him he's the president of the United States. So he just kind of wanders around. They had another thing, a better one, a video yesterday where he comes off the stage. And there's kind of a middle-aged, semi-hot blonde.
Yeah.
And, you know, his little laser Biden eyes go right to her. And he turns around, and he's starting to walk the wrong way. And then Jill runs across the stage, you know. And yeah, I was thinking, calm down, boy. Calm down, Biden. You remember, you told Robert Hur that your wife is hot in a bikini. So there's your wife. So then she kind of grabbed him and straightened him out. And then,
no sniffing for that little puppy.
So he doesn't know where he is. I am a little embarrassed, though, because my favorite shoes are Hokas. They're very expensive, and mine don't last too long because I'm out here on the ranch. I use them as work shoes. But I saw him walking. I saw that little Hoka brand, and I thought, wow, this looks like duckbill platypus beak. And he had these, like, clown shoes on. And I thought, wow, people must think that of me. I wear those. They're so comfortable. But he's now in Hoka.
Yeah. Exactly, because he can keep his balance that way.
I shouldn't. We all have a rendezvous with something like that if we live long enough.
But we're not trying to be president.
Yes. If somebody said to me, Victor, we're going to make you president of the United States, you don't have to campaign. You can be just like Barack Obama, who said, I'd like a third term if I can dial it in. I would say, no.
Yeah.
No. That would be a fate. I don't understand how they can do it. Just. All day shaking hands with people you don't like.
Yeah. All right. Well, did you have something more?
I think I'm kind of a minority viewpoint where most people are talking about the convention, and I think he's not going to make it to the convention.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going to make half of March, April, May, June, July, August, because I've seen people in my own family when they get to that.
Yeah,
I've had too many. I had a grandmother, you know, who was got dementia, and as soon as she got dementia, within 6 months she fell down and broke her hip. Once you break your hip, that's it. You get pneumonia. Yeah. And I had a crippled aunt who deteriorated once that. And so when I see the way he walks, he uses his hands like he's a an avian creature, and their little wings, you know. Yeah. And he tries to balance like. The other day I was walking the dogs and it was completely dark, and I put a little flashlight on my head, and where my route around the ranch goes to, it's about 2.5 miles, but there's all sorts of holes in it, and squirrel, coyote burrows, everything. And at dark, it's dangerous. So I was thinking, there must be something to what Joe Biden does. So I was with the dogs. I was kind of walking like I had little water wings like he does.
Or he's
playing. You're kind of like playing the piano with your hands, you know, imaginary piano. You kind of go like this. And then you kind of deliberately walk up straight back, almost backwards. You bend backwards. And you kind of patter around, whatever.
Did it work?
It did. And I thought, wow, this is something I got to keep in mind.
Well, thank you, Victor. We have a comment from one of your viewers that I thought was interesting.
Oh,
he
boy.
Says,
interesting.
Yeah, he gives you 5 stars, and this is on Apple Podcasts, and it's Kimochka 62, and it's titled Brandon and the SOTU capitalized. So I'm not sure what that means. But now that it's confirmed, Biden hates more than half the country, I'll not lose one moment of sleep or feel guilty that we feel the same about him, his administration lackeys, and his supporters. Love this podcast. Thank you, Kimochka 62. We appreciate that. And thank you, Victor, for everything today. I know that was Friday News Roundup, and it's always, we get it later in the week for us anyways, and it's a tough, you've got a heavy schedule, let's put it that way. So thanks so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Yep. Much appreciate it. See you next time.
And this is Victor Davis Hanson and Sammy Wink, and we're signing off.